So how do you get involved?
Well, one of the first place you want to look is on our website. So that's wiki.openairlife.org. There's a list of current projects in the state there, and I'll talk about the website in a second. Links to documentation on current projects, how to get them, how to build them, how to write, you know, what their architecture is, all kinds of things like that. Information on how to propose a new project. You might see the Open Daylight infrastructure and say, hey, there's a project that I want to do here, and then you can learn how to do that here. There's also quite a few, not down, but we're starting to grow a few mailing lists. I'm giving you the page here. So just look on list.opendaylight.org and you'll see where all our lists are. And I will call your attention to a few of these. I'll talk more about this, but if you want to get involved in various kinds of discussions, just look there. These are all self-subscribe yourself to these guys. So what's the governance of this? Because of course an open source project's governance is a key, crucial, right? So here's the 10,000 mile view, 10,000 foot view. First off, the bylaws are at that URL, so you can go and read them. And if you have, again, like everything else, if you have comments, please provide them. I used to call this Open Daylight, ODL is what I was calling, but then I found out today that it's actually an acronym, a blessed acronym called ODP, Open Daylight Project. So ODP. So there's board of directors. What do they do? Obvious things, right? They manage the business parts of Open Daylight. They do marketing. They have operational decisions. Now, the initial board of directors is populated by the platinum members plus one member per every three gold and silver. And then there's a technical steering committee that sets technical direction. That's what all of us are part of. And we provide the technical co-leadership for Open Daylight. The members are elected and are comprised in general of developers and project leaders. But in the current state, which is sort of, we had to bootstrap it somehow, it's seated with platinum member representatives right now. The chair, the TSC chair, is an ex officio member of the board, ex officio meaning can't vote. And the chair is elected annually, no term limits. So that's all nice. But the important part of all of this, from my perspective, is that Open Daylight is open to anyone. You don't have to be a member. And in particular, anyone can develop and contribute code, all of you can. Anyone can get elected to the TSC, the Technical Steering Committee. You don't have to be a member. Anyone can get elected to the board. And anyone can steer a project in any number of ways. And like every other open source community, this is really about committing code and code and code. So code is the coin of the realm here. So a little more on the TSC. As I said earlier, we're charged with setting the technical direction for Daylight. We're responsible for maintaining the platform code base, and we're also responsible for setting release train scope and schedule. And as I said, the membership is initialized with platinum members, but it will evolve so that core project leads and community representatives will be the members of the technical steering committee, as it should be. So one of the first decisions that we took as a TSC, we met twice. Well, I would call it, 1.5 times. It's kind of an inside joke. So one of the first decisions we made was that we were going to open up both the mailing list. So we had a TSC mailing list that was comprised of just TSC members. And the TSC decided that's not enough transparency, that's not enough openness. So the TSC mailing list that we do our business on is open to all of you. More than that, our calls, which we do our business, are open to all of you. And those calls are currently scheduled for Thursdays at 10 o'clock Pacific Daylight Time. My idea here is that we'll have a gigantic WebEx, and everybody who wants to join that WebEx can join the WebEx. Now, one of the things about this is that initially the TSC decided that non-TSC members would be able to join, but they'd be on mute. we were revisiting that because I think, you know, we don't know how this is all going to work out. This is the first incarnation. But, and I'll publish the dialogue information, unless you already did it, Bill.
Not yet.
On TSC at OpenDaylight.org. List.OpenDaylight. That's wrong, I said, right? It's list.OpenDaylight.org. And then we had what we were calling technical work stream calls, which predated the existence of the actual formation of the consortium on Monday and Wednesdays at 1 Pacific. And we decided to keep those because there's a lot of business to do. And those will also be open, and I'll publish the information about how you can join those on TSC at list.OpenDaylight.org. And then the minutes from our meetings, in case you couldn't make it, will also be published on the wiki, which I think the most recent minutes are up there right now. So please take a look at those. And please give us feedback if there are parts of this that you think are not open or that are somehow not transparent, because that's really the goal of this. Now, I talked about the projects themselves. This is the project life cycle. So basically, you can come and propose a project, and by the way, you can get on the website, you can see how to propose a project. The project can actually go into two states once it's proposed. It can go into what's called bootstrap state, which is kind of a state in which we can, once the TSC decides that something's in bootstrap state, then the code can go up on the Linux Foundation servers that they're hosting for us. Or it can go into incubation state, if it's somewhat more mature. And for bootstrap state, as you can see, it can go into either incubation, mature, or core. And the job of the TSC is basically enabling those or disabling the state transitions between these different states. So this is kind of, the whirlwind tour of what the Open Daylight Project is really about at a 10,000 mile level. Now what we did last time was we just got all the TSC members up here and let you guys you folks just go at it and ask us anything you want. So any of my colleagues that are around and have bullseyes or anything painted on them, come on up. These guys get to sit down. Last time we didn't have chairs, so we're getting it. Everybody's tired. Yeah, we have a board member here. So this is Benson. He's a board member, and we figured that, you know, it's probably useful if somebody can carry a microphone if you guys have questions, which I know you will. So let's go. Who has a question? Okay. Benson. Colin. Now the honorary microphone carrier is Colin Dixon. Thank you, everybody. Everybody, Colin Dixon. It'd be way better if it was on. Can you bring up the mics?
He's a software guy.
Is this working?
Hey man, is this on?
Hey guys, this is James Kelly from Juniper Networks. I just was wondering if you could talk about some of the initial projects underway and what kind of use cases they're trying to solve.
So there are no official projects underway.
Let me say one thing about this. In order to get code up on the Linux Foundation servers, the TSC has to put the associated project into bootstrap mode or incubation mode. To date, what we've done is we put the controller code that had been contributed by Cisco up onto the Linux Foundation site because it's in bootstrap mode. So, Tom, go ahead.
There are no fully accepted projects yet. There's one in bootstrap mode and another that's potentially going to become bootstrap mode soon. We're following this process that's up here. So projects are proposed, they're uploaded, we look at them, we vote on them, we push them forward. And I think one of the questions from last time that's important is that there's no single project, so there's no single thing called the controller project yet. I envision there'll be multiple projects for the controller. both above it and below it, but we've not gotten to that phase yet. That should be soon.
Yeah, we have a lot of things that people have discussed in terms of contributions they would like to make. You see some of those in the architecture slide that may or may not be, yes, the cartoon. So there are a lot of things that people have actually expressed intention to come to bring forth as contributions. We do have code up already on the Open Daylight site. You can download it, you can build it, you can run it, you can do interesting things with it. I would encourage you to do that. We're already up and taking contributions. We've received contributions from various folks and incorporated this into the code base there. So we are up and going as a going concern at this point.
So maybe just to refine my question a little bit more, since I didn't realize that there's nothing up and running, maybe you want to talk about the use case that the proposed code that is there tries to solve? Just like, what does it do?
I'll just say, well, my colleagues are kind of collecting their thoughts. SDN is a general purpose. What we're trying to build here, and what SDN tries to build, is a general purpose use case, a general purpose platform that will address a number of use cases. Those use cases have different qualities, as you know, obviously, as you might imagine. And they have different kinds of requirements. For example, state distribution and consistency model, and things like that. So what Daylight, Open Daylight, the control platform for Open Daylight, is really intended to be general enough to address a wide scope of use cases. But with that, I'll just go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say that I think you misspoke a little bit about the, you know, characterizing the code that's been uploaded. The code that's there actually does run. It does do things, even though it's a candidate. So it's not just like people are throwing in useless code into a bucket.
It's a controller platform.
Yeah, so we actually have controller platform pieces that demonstrate some of the aspects of the architecture that you've got here. They've got appropriate modularity. You have the capacity to have multiple southbounds. You have a software abstraction layer available that allows you to have these capabilities provided by multiple southbound plugins for different kinds of protocols. We've had people propose already, in addition to OpenFlow, PCP. We've had people propose wanting to do things with I2RS. We just had some folks combine and want to do some stuff with those mapping servers on the southbound. So you have all these southbound capabilities that people want to provide. In order for those to be mapped coherently to a consistent set of northbound APIs, you need a software abstraction layer that allows for that mapping. That's already present. You need to make sure that you have the capacity to support multi-tenancy. We have a story for that. We have a lot of conversations going on around clustering, but there's already some clustering in there. We actually had a very robust discussion last hour and had previously about the different kinds of clustering things that people have in terms of trade-offs between consistency, the partition tolerance, and availability, those kinds of things. So there's a lot of stuff already present in the framework. There are a set of services already present to handle things like topology and ARP handlers and whatnot. There's a lot of working controller code there, but we do know there are other contributions coming from other participants and hopefully from other places. I've actually talked to several folks who have come up to me and said, hey, we'd like to do a project like this. And so we know that, like, even from things not from original members, we have people talking about doing projects at this point.
Yeah, remember that you don't have to be a member to propose a project, to contribute code, to work on code that's out there. Yeah, open source consortium.
So, can I add something? Am I allowed to? I mean, as somebody that's actually checked out the code, played with it, hacked on it, and committed some stuff back, what's there is actually a controller which, if you check it out and run it, will bond to OpenFlow 1.0 switches, actually control them, and, you know, you can actually set it up to route traffic between the endpoints. So it's not like it's a toy conglomeration of framework pieces. It actually does run and do something useful, so.
Yeah, I mean, as Colin's saying, in the current functionality that's available in the code that's in Bootstrap now, it's not accepted yet as one of the other states at this point, but it is a fully functional, you know, OpenFlow controller with the southbound that's there, but it's designed to add other southbounds that would support other use cases, service provider-oriented use cases, you know, other data center use cases. So when you're asking about what use cases are supported, the current implementation of the current code base has a single southbound plugin right now, but it's designed to add additional, and that's one of the main goals of this architecture, is to be able to support a variety of use cases, as Tom was saying.
One thing I neglected to do is, these are my colleagues on the technical steering committee. Could you guys introduce yourself? your affiliation.
My name is Ed Warnicki. I'm with Cisco Systems.
I'm Tom Nato from Juniper.
Okay. Who's next? Over here. Hey, Mike. Guy.
No,
it's hard shot. Don't ask it. Don't ask it. It's a skill calling to get better at it, promise.
Just a curiosity question. The candidate code that you have now, in what language is it written? Is it C, Java, or what?
So, to be clear, the Bootstrap project that we have right now that's been fully accepted. That code is currently written in Java, uses OSGI for modularity, because it's very clear to us architecturally, we need to have a plugin-based, modular, extensible infrastructure that supports things like install for service upgrades, the kinds of things that you need in a production quality controller, and that's currently where we're at.
It also comes with a full build environment. I mean, you can build the thing in about 10 minutes, and actually get it working with many minutes. And now I've done it, works pretty well.
Others? I'm sure people have more questions. Okay, good. Over here.
Hello.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead. I'll get you next.
Two questions. One regarding OSGI, and the other is you talked about architecture and projects regarding debugging and troubleshooting.
So feel free to ask a question.
Okay. So the OSGI, isn't it a little bit heavyweight?
OSGI was actually designed to be a very small, lightweight infrastructure, and it allows you to have a very robust modularity to support things like multiple versions of plugins to handle the dependency issues, to potentially have multiple providers for the same functionality. It's actually really light compared to other options that are available in terms of the kinds of functions you need to actually build a robust system. That's it. I'm open to other people commenting.
You got to remember too that these are candidate projects, right? Or the bootstrap projects, which means they've not been fully accepted and progressed. So, you know, these things are not set in stone. So the fact that we're using OSGI doesn't mean that we wouldn't use something else, you know, as it advances, right?
By the way, if you have suggestions, improvements, and need help, please bring them.
Sure. Regarding troubleshooting, nothing was mentioned. Is that something not looked at?
Are you asking about troubleshooting in the sense of I'm debugging my code, or are you asking troubleshooting in the sense of troubleshooting the network?
Troubleshooting network.
We have some tools that are currently provided with the existing, the current Bootstrap project.
Hi, this is open source basis, but do we have any plan to make a standardized, so especially on the API?
Yeah, let me start. So this is an open source project. What we do here is code, not standards. And in the future, for example, if we get experience with some set of northbound, southbound, whatever APIs that need to be standardized, then we'll go to a standards form for that. But really what this is about is code, right? And so the analogy that we sometimes give is sort of like puzzles, right? Well, you know, there are a bunch of different Unix kind of variants around. There was System 5, there was Linux, there was BSD, there was all this stuff. And they all had different versions of different kinds of APIs. And, you know, the industry actually, through the open source process, to a large extent, sorted that out. And then it was kind of retroactively standardized. So we kind of have a feeling like what we want to do is get out here, get experience, try some different things, see what works, and then if there's a need to standardize things, of course.
Yeah, to me, I try to understand this is more like experimental, or after that it will be more like commercialized deployment, will be branch out, or
experimental is the right characterization, because there are a lot of open source, open source projects that are kind of de facto standard, right? And a lot of times people don't feel the need to go back and, you know, formally standardize them, say in an SVO or something like that, because it's not necessary. But if it becomes necessary, then, you know, we'll do it, or somebody will do it.
There's a long and fine history in open source of people solving problems in the open source. It becomes the widely adopted solution, and then you go back and actually standardize it. You can look at things like HTTP, XMPP. There's a whole long history there. SIP is another good one. In open source, running code is the coin of the realm. You know, and so it's sort of back to the old, we have a need of presidents or kings, we believe in our consensus in running code. So
unfortunately, that's a really bad analogy because that's the IETF.
I know. But basically, there are problems to be solved. And what you do is you go through and you solve problems. You gain operational experience. Some things settle out as being useful solutions, some things don't. Once you've settled down, you can go out and talk about what needs to be standardized and what doesn't.
Is that good? Yep.
Yeah, but I want to address the comment about the is it production quality or not? There's fully intent that, you know, I think we have a consensus that the code that's going to come out of here is production quality. This is not a toy project. And it may be used for other sort of enterprise versions or whatnot, but I think the base code that comes out of here fully intend that it will run in real networks.
I'll just say one thing a little bit more on that. If you're helpful, is that a lot of the participants have already stated publicly that they intend to bring this code back into their products. So
that's awesome.
In particular, we're building on that.
So Michael Printer from Caltech. I already had a look at your code, and it looked a little bit like Floodlight to me, except that you reintroduced OSGI that was removed in Floodlight for performance reasons. So I was wondering, why do you start a new open source project and not just contribute to the existing ones?
It's not Floodlight. I mean, here's the thing. When you implement a network protocol, there are certain things that are going to look similar. It's the nature of the beast. And when you look at highly idiomatic languages like Java, there are idioms that everyone follows. I mean, observer patterns are useful. So no, not Floodlight.
Why not?
So the question remains, why do you start a new project and not contribute to one of the existing ones?
Let me try. So first off, there's a lot of open source. Floodlight is not the only open source,
yeah.
Right? And one of the things that is sort of underlying the open daylight activity is that so far to date, none of those have gained sort of this, you know, industry acceptance as a platform that people are building on. Everybody builds their own, right? And that's one of the problems we're trying to solve with this. Because if everybody has their own controller, meaning their own Northbound APIs, their own feature sets and all of that, we didn't feel like we could get the kind of industry convergence around that we wanted. So it's not so much that there exists another open source, because there are a bunch of them, as you know, right? It's more of this, nothing is coalesced around it. The community has not coalesced around any of the ones that Floodlight or anything else, right? And so we're trying to address that.
But yeah, just to add to that, I think in addition to the momentum that, you know, we're trying to build around, you know, a single platform that a lot of folks will get behind, you'll notice that we have the maintainers of Floodlight as platinum members on the project, right? So, you know, they're fully behind it. Rob was here in the last session talking about, you know, BitSwitch's involvement and their intent to bring in components from all the great work that they've done. So, you know, we really are trying to build something that is going to be, best of breed production quality that is not sort of driven by a single organization or a small group, but is really something that has broad backing, and so that customers, as a result, would see that broad backing from the industry and get more comfort with actually adopting SDN more quickly. That's the hope.
By the way, John Doyle, one of my favorite scientists. Go ahead, please. Look, there's not going to be drinks out there for a while. You might as well ask the question.
You're hiding behind the glass.
You know, John?
So I see pretty much everything in the networking world out there in the blogs. So are there anything, is there anything which is outside of the scope of daylight?
Go ahead.
I apologize. There's a little bit of an inside joke here. Because through the entire discussion of Open Daylight, I've had one consistent example that I've used of something that unequivocally I believe we can all support as being out of scope. And that would be a high-performance distributed 3D rendering engine is probably not in the scope of Open Daylight. So that said, we do have a process going on of formally defining the scope.
So to follow up, like, for example, someone comes up and says, which is totally not being worked on, but you want to introduce something. So at what point of time do you limit that particular project being introduced, or, you know, the kind of process?
It's self-limiting. I mean, if you don't just show up and propose something, you show up with some code. And if it solves a real problem...
Sure, but they could always come in the code, right?
The board, let me just ask you a little bit. The board has actually given, has actually proposed what the scope of Open Daylight is. And we were given that, there were like five or six bullet points, and unfortunately I don't have a slide on that. You know, if you would have asked that question in the last session, I have a slide on that. But the scope is constrained to be within the domain you might imagine for that. You know.
Yeah, we're not working on unicorns. I mean, it's controller projects, generally speaking, right?
Yeah, 3D rendering. So, you know, like everything else, you have to constrain the scope of the relation. You know, we won't get anything done.
Yeah, I mean, we've actually had a number of people who sort of wandered by suggesting things that they would be interested in doing as projects. I think Dave mentioned last hour there are some folks interested in doing some list mapping kinds of stuff and as plugins to this architecture.
So you can see how that kind of makes sense, right? I mean, whereas there are other projects that won't.
Let me just try to answer a little bit more directly. I mean, if there's an idea for something that you feel is not covered but is within scope of Open Daylight, or should be within scope, the process would be proposing a new project in that space, you know, with code, proposing it. You know, we have a life cycle stage called propose. So at that point, it's viewed and evaluated, reviewed by the TSC, this body, and it's determined, you know, whether to bring it into the Open Daylight project in some stage, right? So that would be the way to get new projects that cover new ground that, you know, aren't already there, or that you want to propose an enhancement or something like that. So there is a well-defined process for doing that.
Yeah, and by the way, this is one of the major items that's in the purview of the TSC is this gate. So, you know, if you have a project you want to propose, you can get it the life cycle. You can also talk to us on the TSC list. Yeah, that's right. We made a proposed project on the mailing list.
Actually, if you go to the main page of the wiki at the bottom, there's a link to the project proposal page, which will tell you how to go about putting together a proposal. Because there's certain elements that you need to have present. You need to have some description of your proposal, the scope. What the resource commitments behind it, who the proposed initial committers, what do you call yourself?
There's actually an example there for you to look at.
Yeah, so, I mean, you go through, you put together your proposal, you mail project proposals, you know, people will talk about it, there's a period of public discussion, and you move forward.
My turn?
Go ahead.
Okay. So, hey Dave, go over here.
Sorry.
I'm sorry, Steve Wallace, Indiana University. So there's one thing that's confusing me a little bit. So many of the principles in the Open Daylight project, their primary business is producing a controller, or they're producing a controller, may not be their primary business, but they're actively pursuing a commercial controller. Almost all of them are. And there seems to be, at least I'm confused about how those efforts relate to this project. For example, one could assume that they've all agreed to stop and just enhance this open source controller with their various value adds for their particular product lines, or that they are going to continue on in a completely parallel effort. You know, for example, I believe Cisco has a controller. Is Cisco's controller going to become Open Daylight? Is it going to be? You know, so that part of the space is pretty confusing, and if I'm confused, I'm guessing lots of people are confused.
So the simple answer is we're building out of the demo. I will sort of say, you know, beyond that, and I said this somewhat last session, what are the things that you realize when you get into the business of building a controller? Is there are lots of things you have to do that are sort of fundamentally uninteresting. They're the plumbing, the sort of background work. And a lot of what OpenDaylight is providing is a place where we can collaborate on those things instead of having to all reinvent the same wheel again and again and again. We can basically focus on the really interesting bits of SDN.
Anybody else
want to
take a shot?
Yeah, just an additional comment. I mean, there's no sort of formal or even tacit agreement by all of the folks you see up here or the companies that are currently in the consortium to incorporate. No one is forcing anyone to do anything. But the expectation, based on everything that's been said publicly and, you know, in the process of putting the consortium together, is that, you know, as Dave pointed out and Ed confirmed, and I can say on behalf of IBM, that, you know, we are planning to fold OpenDaylight back into our products in this space. So, you know, the expectation is that, and Inder said this morning, that the platform is intended to be commercial grade and production ready so that people can use it in developing their own commercial products. That's not to say I'm not making any statements about other people's plans or company plans. There's no sort of, no one has any, made any formal statements like that, but you know, that is the expectation and the intention.
Also, I'll just point out one other thing, Steve. I think there's a thesis here that real action is not in the controller space, but above it. And so what we want to do, one of the things we want to do is provide a platform on which people can build applications on top of a standardized control platform. And so it's not really inconsistent, I think, to imagine that that would happen and that people would come together and say, hey, well, really, perhaps the value add and the value proposition is not in the controller, but above it. Ask another one, Steve. You got, I know you got a track. What's that one?
So I actually think you guys all punted on that one.
Hey, we did the best we could.
What would you like us to, what would you
expect? So actually, you know what I think is, what I think is revealing, so I've spoken with folks who are not, what's the term, aren't authorized to speak on these subjects. But speak on these subjects, I can't say who or which company. And there seems to be internal, from what I can tell, there seems to be a tremendous amount of uncertainty all the way up to people who are responsible for things like controller projects within large companies that are on that list about how Daylight will relate to their current project. So, and that's not criticism, that's sort of just a level check on where things are in the process. And I just wanted to hear sort of your response, because you guys are you know, you have a much better, clearer view than I would. But I did find, you know, walking down in halls, I've pinned people down and said, hey, you know, you guys are working on a controller and you're on this list, is what's gonna go on there? And you're talking to a senior person. And they said, we don't know. Yeah, and I guess the real answer, and really I'm not being critical, I was just kind of was interested in the responses. I'm really fascinated to see two things at the next Open Networking Summit, where they have it, because they've obviously maxed this place out now too, and where this project is, so looking forward to it.
Well, that's what Andrew said this morning. I mean, you know, the proof's in the pudding. Come see me in a year and see what we've got. I mean, that's, you know, I think we've all said we fully intend on using this as much as we can, and we'll see.
Anybody else?
Accepting projects and getting them in that process right there.
Yeah, because you know it's very difficult. It would be impossible really to kind of get talk about release schedules or anything like that. And so we get projects into the life cycle.
I see. And what about in terms of testing the quality of I guess that's also the same. Testing the whatever the code is there. Do you intend to put out the results, or what's the criteria?
In terms of
overall project, not necessarily a piece.
Yeah, so
maybe I contribute a piece, but that's not the whole thing, right?
There are many levels of testing that you want to do. So, like, I know that we have the infrastructure to do continuous integration. We have 4 months of continuous unit testing. There are already discussions going on around how to do continuous system, integration testing. I know that we have a lot of TBD discussions about how to do sort of a larger scale integration testing for simultaneous release. Obviously, testing is a very large part of this.
I'm wondering if you're kind of driving at the question of how are we going to test system integration?
No, I'm not expecting that kind of details at this point, but I'm just saying, let's say whatever the release cycle is going to be, and let's say you're releasing tomorrow, and then with that release, would you put up, like, this is what was passed, and these are the outstanding issues or non-outstanding?
Yeah, I mean, I think we fully intend on making that all public and, viewable for anybody that wants to see it. And I think we're also, from my perspective at least, fully intending on using modern software engineering practices, right?
Okay.
So, I hope so.
Thanks.
And the controller dev lists are all public, so like it's not like we're going to hide issues. Like the people that are developing are communicating to their across the list is public. So
yeah. Additionally, we already have a Bugzilla up to track bugs. The stuff that's required in terms of the mature release cycle, they require you to report out the bugs that you have outstanding when you do a release of a particular project. And of course, you would expect something like that writ large for the simultaneous release. So we do heavily from many successful open source projects that have similar characteristics.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely drawn heavily from. We're not looking for that.
Yeah, and also not going to reinvent any wheels that we don't have.
Yeah. Might relate to a question a bit earlier, but you sort of mentioned come back next year and the proof is there. But can you kind of define what do you mean by success? What is success? 20 projects done, out there, working, acceptance? What's the sort of measure that you're thinking about in terms of the success criteria of open data?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think Inder mentioned some of this in the morning, talking about the overall goals. I mean, certainly we would measure ourselves by, usage and adoption of the platform, incorporation into products from vendors that, people building services on top of the platform that are then deployed in real use cases. I mean, I think as with any open source project, the success is defined by a few things around usage and adoption around the community that is developed around it, right? There's no developer community around it. I don't think we could claim it as a success. You know, even if there was usage, in my view, you know, I think we're looking for, you know, metrics across each of these areas. You know, adoption, incorporation into commercial products, building services on top of it, and of course the developer community around it.
So can I just add something to that? I mean, you could potentially take a project, and I don't know what that's defined, as you say, you have a process to take that, but one of those projects could take up a lot of resource and a lot of time. Is that, are you going to put boundaries for your TSC council that says, I'm going to take one super project on, or is it just, you know, lots of small projects?
So,
that's hard to comment on right now, just simply because we're just starting to look at the contributions. But I would imagine that the control platform is going to be a big project. And I can imagine that a few of these are going to be big projects, but they're core to the mission of Open Daylight. So we have to get through those, right? So that's kind of.
So there's something implicit, I think, in the question that you asked that I don't think is really quite so. So implicit in the question you ask is this notion that the TSC is allocating resources to projects. And that's not normally how open source works. Basically, you know, resources accrete to the projects that people want to contribute to. So if we have a large project which attracts a lot of resources, those are resources coming from the outside world. They're not necessarily attracting from other projects. Those projects attract the people interested in contributing to them. And so in a healthy ecosystem, resources land where the interest is. That's just kind of the way it is at working out. And I want to jump back briefly to the previous question you asked about what a success look like. And there are all kinds of metrics that we can talk about around success. Number of projects you mentioned, adoption of these mentioned, and all of these are excellent metrics. But sort of thinking about it, it's kind of hard to sort of look out in the world and point to an open source project that has fallen smack in the middle in terms of success or failure. Generally speaking, when you look at a project, you can tell whether it's a vibrant, healthy ecosystem or not. And so you need metrics less than we're all accustomed to applying in other spheres, because you look at something like, you know, the Apache web server, like the Eclipse platform, like the Linux kernel, and the things that have been successful are really obviously successful. And so you can break out any metrics that you would like, but you don't really need them.
I think you already answered some of the questions, but I still have, if the company is interested to really become one of the membership or sponsorship, so for the resources, is centralized, or we need to have proposed something first, and then after that, we have the resource to be planned out.
Go ahead. I think I gave a pretty good answer to that last time.
Yeah, so the resource commitment in terms of FTE on behalf of the member, so for example, a platinum member commits to having 10 FTE working on Open Daylight projects. Projects with Open Daylight. That's not the members sort of saying, okay, we're going to assign these 10 headcount to the TSC to allocate. That's saying, listen, there's stuff within Open Daylight. There are projects we may be proposing. There may be existing projects we want to contribute to. And those resources we will allocate to the things that we find to be interesting, the things that we find to be useful, things that we find to be needful. This is not a command and control perspective.
I think just to reiterate this, the TSC is not allocating resource in the way that's been asked about here, right? And as Ed pointed out, in an open source community, resources kind of tend to gravitate towards those projects that people are interested in. And that gives us an idea, again, as Ed pointed out, of how successful and how important these projects are. Basically, if people don't want to develop on a project, it's probably not very interesting.
This might be more of a scope question, but do you already have a list of expected or required northbound APIs that you're expecting?
I think we've discussed this a few times, and I think that we generally agree that the APIs are going to be determined by the code and the functionality that gets introduced and how they're used. And as they you know, are widely used and adopted, we may sort of publish them as official APIs, but we're nowhere near that, I mean, yet, right? We have to sort of get experience with APIs, just like, I think it's very hard to prescribe from a top-down way what the APIs will be. It has to be based on what function is brought in and what actually gets used.
Yeah, fair answer. Thank you. You know, that's a really good point, is that this process is generally, even though we have a TSC and a board and all of that, the actual process of creating the artifacts is really bottom-up.
So do you view this as a collection of individual projects that work together, or a large project that, you know, works as a condensed system?
So I think from a functional point of view, if you look around at other people who have built very complex software ecosystems of this sort, what you wind up finding is that you have a collection of individual projects that work together, that integrate together, and then you end up having a set of things that are built as sort of final products around it. Even though the technology space is very, very different, Eclipse is actually an instructive place to look for this, because there you have a very large number of projects, I think like 75 projects in this last simultaneous release, that all operate as independent projects with independent scopes of interest and concern, but they do a simultaneous release together. And there are a number of flavors that are published of that simultaneous release, and I expect we'll be in a similar place, particularly because when you look at the world of networking, we have lots of different scopes of interest. The data center needs are going to be different from the service provider needs. They'll have a core commonality. We'll end up using the same components to build flavors that are appealing to both. But you can't force one size fits all on the whole network.
And what is it, the licensing model again?
Eclipse. Yeah, EPL.
Eclipse. Over here.
I guess what's bothering me is the timing element of what you're discussing. You say come back in a year and, you know, give us a report card, and it just seems really ambitious given the scope of what you're dealing with here and the state of uncertainty in exactly what it is you're going to be developing. I mean, are you guys worried about this at all, or?
Let me try. Okay. So first off, I think we have a pretty good idea. Even though there are components, like somebody asked about markdown APIs, there are not candidates, but people have talked about proposing markdown APIs, and actually even frameworks for markdown APIs. And people have proposed controller code, people have proposed other components of this picture. So the real job that we have is to, sort of, first off, kind of understand how these things will all work together, and then put it together. And we actually have sort of this straw man Q3 for getting our first code drop out. And so we're really...
I know, that's what I'm going, what? How are they going to do this by Q3?
Well, there's working code in a lot of places. So, it's not as if this stuff is being built from scratch. There's a lot of working code. And so a lot of the uncertainty is really around coordination of how we're going to coordinate this, not how are we going to get the contributions, which is really the harder part, right? And so we have a lot of those, right? So now what we have to do is a coordination effort and build a reasonable first pass code drop. And I think it's aggressive, but I think there's enough resource here and enough commitment and enough existing code to make it happen.
Yeah, and open source projects move at a very different speed than you're accustomed to seeing from normal commercial projects. It's a really successful collaboration model. And honestly, part of what makes it really successful is the level of openness that is sort of giving you currently unease. because everyone feels better when you can come out and say, this is the roadmap, this is what we're doing, there's a command and control involved. But the truth of the matter is problems resolve themselves from the bottom up much more quickly. And that's typically how open source moves forward, and that's how we expect this to move forward. So there are enough resources in play, there's enough support, there's a tremendous amount of interest, there's a tremendous commitment here. I'm not as concerned as you seem to be in that regard. But your concern is valid, I can understand it.
Yeah, we discussed this quite a bit, and I'll say one other thing. It's another component that was sort of implicit in what I just said, which is one of our goals, I think Denise mentioned this, is to have a vibrant and, you know, active developer ecosystem. And that's one of the ways, of course, if people are, you know, that's one of the ways that you inject, you know, velocity into the system. It injects other things too. You know, it being an open source project, we're expecting that, we're hoping for that, we're trying to build that. Okay. Is there another question over here? Go ahead.
So I have a question around the APIs and what you said earlier, that you expect the action to really be at the SDN app level, you know, at the higher level. So just given that, and then what you mentioned earlier about a bottom-up approach to the APIs, does that mean any thought to like actually a top-down approach for the APIs to really outreach to the app developers to see what do they need from the network rather than, hey, this is what the network can give you?
So it's interesting because the way you phrase that is really pretty interesting. Bottom-up and top-down appears to be relevant to where you're sitting. And so, in a lot of ways, sort of something like the development of POSIX, I would claim that's bottom up, right? Developers, consume these different APIs with different frequency and how much they liked it, or whatever, or how functional it was for them, and then eventually that was standardized from the top down. I can see a similar approach happening here. So it is bottom up in that way. Bottom up from the developers, right? You were saying developers top down, I can see that bottom up.
There's a controller users mailing list. If you have needs, let us know.
Yeah, get all of those mailing lists on this page, lists, wherever it is, list.opendaylight. These, they're all subscribe to the next slide.
Yeah, I mean, that's essentially a great suggestion. I mean, I think what I said earlier about this being sounding like a bottom-up process, it is again based on usage of those APIs as far as which ones will persist and live on and become codified as part of the platform. Right? But at the same time, we do have a channel for collecting requirements, you know, from all across the spectrum of the community, including the application writers, and we definitely want to encourage that. And we do have a forum for that as well. So, you know, please, if you have specific things that you're looking for, suggest them there, and better yet, even maybe write some functions that support those APIs and bring that in as well.
Yeah, I'll just say one other thing about that. As networking people, we have been not very good at understanding who's consuming our APIs. So, you know, like my favorite thing to do is write ASN1 code.
Yeah.
You know, probably not. As networking people, IETF or whatever, we're just starting to get the sensibility that, you know, we have to have the developer community tell us what it is they need to consume. And that sensibility is here already.
Yeah, I think one of the things, and I made this point in the last version of this, is code is the sincerest form of interest. So if you're an app developer and there's something you need from an API point of view from the controller, contribute a patch. Because that tells us really clearly that there's a need there that needs to be filled. It gives a pretty good idea that you care enough about that need to contribute something. I mean, one of the things that you find with open source is, I mean, we like to talk about bottom up in terms of the way code bubbles, but code bubbles every which way in the open source. You know, I've had places where I've contributed patches to open source projects that I just needed to have this one little bit of functionality for, and they've been accepted, and I needed that for integration purposes. You know, and it's a very fluid way to work with the world. This is not go petition to get put yourself put on a roadmap time. This is code. Code is the coin of the realm.